Welcome this morning. It is good to have you here at Agora. Whether you are young, not so young, or feel like you don't even fit into the not so young category because you have many years on your side, you are welcome here today. And one of the things that's good about today is that we do have younger ones here today because it's school holidays. So I see some of you. Because it's school holidays, our First Steps in Truth Finders take a break, but if you missed it on the way in, at the door there are some activity sheets there, there's some word searches and stuff, and probably some of the not so young might want to go grab one of those to focus as well if you want. But Sunday Tots is on through the holidays, but it's self-serve. So what that means today is if you've got twos and under, you can head on back and use our playroom, or you might want to get with a few other parents and tag team and share the Sundays out. But Sunday Tots is available as a space for your little ones today. Hey, but who's here from Truth Finders or First Steps? Is anybody here from Truth Finders or First Steps today? I see your hand down the back. There's a few of you. Hey, one of the things that's really cool is that our First Steps and Truth Finders each week have a small time where they come and they give their gifts to God, and their gifts to God go all the way to Thailand to help out with two preschools in Thailand. And some of us have had the privilege to visit the villages of Kuala Lumpur and Krai Mo Kee, where these two preschools are. And one of the exciting things is that in a few weeks' time, we're going to be able to bring some stuff back to the kids upstairs, but also to you downstairs, some information about what's going on in the villages. Our team's just been over to go and have a visit. And so from one of our partner churches in Auckland, from Botany Life, a small team just went to Thailand, and part of their trip was they visited the villages. And the good news is, I haven't got images to show yet, they're still putting that together, but the good news is that things are going really well at the schools. And I did get a chance, sitting with one of the guys that went, to have a look at some of the photos and some of the video. And it was really exciting because 2 years ago, Nong's down here and a few others, we went across, and it was cool to see photos just taken last month, and the kids are 2 years older. And for example, I was looking to see if I could see a photo of this young guy called Gouda, and I stayed in his home, and he was a young boy that I got to hang out a bit. But his younger sister, who was really little 2 years ago at the preschool, she's now 2 years older, and there was a video clip, which I'll tell you about in a few weeks' time, that made me really excited about what can happen in the lives of these young ones. But so I want to say, for any Truth Finders First Steps kids, thank you that you contribute to our Hill Tribe Hope, because you're making a difference in the lives of these young children. It's pretty exciting, but I want to move from there in a moment, because today we're talking about family, and we are talking about young and not so young and old. And as we do that, I got thinking about Thailand, because I've really enjoyed the visits that I've done there and been able to meet people, and especially been able to meet a young guy like Gouda. And the interesting thing with him is that as I met him, and his prayer card talks about him here, his favourite food is meatballs, he loves to sing, and he has a beautiful voice. I've heard him sing. But there was one thing that was interesting about this boy, is that when I was asking him about what he thought of his future, he's 13, and at the time I saw him, he was going to the preschool because he had missed the education piece for his age, and he was playing catch-up at preschool, which is quite sad. But do you know what his dream of? He wants to go to a Bible school and learn the Bible so he can teach the Bible like the traveling pastor that visits their village each Sunday does. What a dream for this little kid. And as I think about that, it's a little bit like my story and about the story today we're going to look at in the life of a guy called Timothy. Because it doesn't matter what age you are, you belong in God's family, and family matters. And whether you're young or old, there is something for you in this family, both to receive and to contribute. And what I find interesting is that he's got this desire, because there's this guy who travels around the villages each week, and when he arrives at their village and comes and just simply teaches the Bible, and most weeks he's teaching about the life of Jesus, it's really simple, is that as Gouda is there each week, he's looking on and he's going, I want to be that guy who can teach others about Jesus. I remember being that kid. I can remember being that kid many years ago. And there was one guy that was in our church. In fact, Earlier, he'd been the plumber who'd plumbed out our house when I was really young, like maybe about 6 or 7. But when I was 10 and 11, he was also my Bible class teacher. And then he left our local area near Matamata, and he went and did this weird thing. He became an evangelist. Now, some of you know Paul Tabram. He's the equivalent today of like what we call a traveling evangelist, somebody who goes and just shares the love of Jesus with others all around the place. And this guy, who'd been our plumber and then become my Bible class teacher, he started to travel around telling people about Jesus. And then I remember heading way up north to Northland to a place called Cooper's Beach. And as a young 14-year-old, I remember being on the beach and us getting to share Jesus with people up there. And I remember watching one night as this man, his name was Lex, and as he got up on the temporary stage on the beach and he shared about the love of Jesus, I can remember as a 14-year-old going, I want to be like Lex one day. I want to stand on a stage and tell people about Jesus. Lex really encouraged me as a young guy, not only with what I saw, but also with what he said into my life. And it's interesting that there's a story in the Bible that I think is similar. And if you've got your Bible, you might want to turn to Timothy, the book of Timothy, and the first letter of Timothy. There's two letters. There's a 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. Same Timothy, but two different letters. And if you were to go and do a word search, which I'd encourage you to do, like maybe during this week, go to somewhere like Bible Gateway and plug in Timothy and go and read all the pieces of the Bible about Timothy. As far as we're aware, he's the only one that's mentioned with that name. Seems to be the same guy. And you'll pick up his whole story. And what's interesting with Timothy is that outside of the likes of Paul and a little bit Peter, his is probably one of the most repeated names in our New Testament beyond the life of Jesus, in the book of Acts and the letters to the churches. You see Timothy's name everywhere. You know, who is this guy? Who is he that he's so important that his name is continually mentioned? And what we read of in the book of Acts was that there was this area, it's in what we call today modern Turkey, but it was in the area where there were two cities, one called Derbe and one called Lystra. And Timothy came from Lystra. And one day, Paul and his associates, they arrived there on a missionary journey sharing Jesus with the people in the new towns that they would come to, and they came to the city of Lystra in the south of Turkey. And as they came there, they'd come from the area of Syria, and they came across, and they came into Lystra, and they began to share about Jesus. Lystra was the town in which Timothy lived. And all we know about Timothy at this stage was that he lived there and that he was young, possibly even just a young teenager. And as Paul comes in and he starts preaching, they see this man who's lame, who's got a bad leg and can't walk properly. And Paul comes and he heals him in Jesus' name. And everybody starts rushing around Paul and Barnabas and they start going, "You guys are the gods. You're Zeus and you're Hermes." And they start worshipping them as the gods, the Greek gods. And Paul and Barnabas are going, "No, that's not who we are." So one minute everybody's worshipping them as the gods, and then when they refuse and reject the worship, next minute they're getting taken outside the city, they're getting stones thrown at them, and Paul is left dead outside the city of Lystra. He's dead. Well, they think he's dead. They go away. He gets up, dusts himself off. Do you know what he does? Goes back in the city like crazy guy. And two more times, Paul and his associates go back in that city and they share with the people the love of Jesus and the message of Jesus. And it says many people decided to follow Jesus. We're not told about Timothy at this point. We know that he's young and that he lives in that city. But we do know this, that Paul leaves there and finishes that first sort of missionary trip and he heads back to Antioch where he's based. And they share with the people the amazing things that God has done amongst the non-Jews. And as he shares that about what God has done amongst the Gentiles, there's concern raised going, "Oh, we don't know if that's actually a good thing. Because we think that Jesus, you know, he's the fulfillment of the law, which is to the Jews, and it's for Jews only. We don't like this idea of the Gentiles. And if the Gentiles are going to become part of what we do, they need to follow all the law." And so Paul heads down to Jerusalem, and they have this council with the leaders of the church. and they argue and discuss this whole thing about whether Gentiles have to follow the law of the Jews to be able to be in the family of God, to be accepted and be welcome. And they've got some big family matters going on. There's a lot of tension there. But the decision is made that they don't. That the Gentiles are free and that they are included in the family of God. And so Paul goes back with that news to Antioch and they celebrate it. And then he heads off again on another trip. And this time when he comes to Lystra, it says that as he comes to Lystra to revisit and see how this little church is going, that he meets Timothy. And that at this point, Timothy is already a follower of Jesus. Timothy's mum, she's Jewish. And Timothy's dad, he's Greek. He's like a half-caste. Is he accepted in the family or not? He's sort of half in through his mum, but not quite through his dad. But remember what's just happened in Jerusalem? He is. He's accepted in the family. We know that he's young, a follower of Jesus, half Jew, half Greek. And I can't help but wonder what had happened to cause him to follow Jesus. We read in another place that his grandmother and his mother had both taught him from the scriptures. Now, what that means is they hadn't taught him from Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John because they were sort of in process. They'd taught him from the Old Testament scriptures. They were his Jewish side. At some point, he's been introduced to the fulfillment of those scriptures, Jesus. It's quite possible that Timothy is one of the many who came to follow Jesus when Paul first visited Lystra. And I can't help but think of, here's Timothy, and Paul arrives, this famous Paul guy arrives, and he's come and he's sharing about Jesus again. He's about to go some other places to share about Jesus. And here's this young man, Timothy, who's very young, and he's come to follow and love Jesus. And he sees Paul and he goes, Paul, I want to be with you. I want to do what you're doing. And instead of Paul going, oh, actually, just grow up a bit first, you know, or just wait a few years, a bit more experience, do some more study. You know what Paul says? Come with me. And Paul takes Timothy with him on the journey. They join together. And from then on, you read about Timothy. He's either present with Paul, or if they're separated, he's in support of Paul, or he's on an errand for Paul. And here's some of the things you find out about young Timothy. He's a messenger. He's an encourager. He's a servant. He's a friend. He's a partner. He's a co-worker. He's a leader to many churches and to leaders in the early church. This young man who has this desire to follow Jesus and sees an opportunity to go with Paul and does incredible things. And the rest of Acts and the epistles testify to that. But that's not where I want to spend the rest of today. Because what happened in time as Timothy became somebody of great influence in the church, he was still considered young, a young man. And Paul writes this letter to him, the first letter, and he's wanting to address to Timothy the fact that, Timothy, you are young. But round here, that's okay. And that, in fact, even in your youthfulness, you are very valuable in the family of God. And so I want us to have a look there. Look in Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4. And so these are Paul's instructions to Timothy about his youthfulness, but also about the generational diversity in the church. And in many ways, as we're in the series about loving one another, we need to understand how to love one another across the generations. That family actually matters around here because we are a family. So this is where it starts. 1 Timothy 4:12. Paul writes to Timothy these words, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity." Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. I mean, here's what's cool about this is if you feel like you fit into the young category, this is your verse, you know? This is it. You can like wear it like a badge. Somebody's looking down and you go, "Don't look down on me because I'm young," you know? So what does this really mean? Is it the fact that when Timothy is feeling somebody's looking down on him, it says don't let them? Should he tell them to stop it? Like, stop looking down on me because I'm young. Like, is that what he's meant to do? What's he meant to do? How is he to prevent people even from looking down on him when he's young. And I think we need to take those first two sentences together. Don't let anyone look down you for being young, but be an example. It's as if Paul's saying, hey, you know the best way to deal with people looking down on you for being young is you be an example to them. You make it so that they have no reason to look down on you. But don't let it happen. This word look down on means to don't let anyone despise you, scorn you, to lower you down, to think little of you. It's interesting because in another place, Paul writes to the church in Rome and he says these words. Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourselves with sober judgment. So listen to that. This is clear instruction to us. As followers of Jesus and part of the family called the church, Paul is saying, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. So that's instruction to all of us. None of us should think of ourselves more highly than we ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment. So that's generally for all. That's for Timothy too. But what he's saying to Timothy, he's saying, as you have a sober estimation of yourselves, as you don't think too highly of yourselves, don't let other people do that to you. You figure out your value and your worth, and you be an example with that, but don't let other people be the ones who think lower of you. Don't let that stick on you. And this idea of being an example, I just love the word there. The word for being an example is, this is my pronunciation of it, this is not accurate. This is like taking the Greek word, looking at how it's meant to be said, and how it's written, and how it's spelt, and the word I come up with is typos. You know, like when you're on the keyboard or on the phone, and you know, the spell correct can stuff things up for you, and you do a typo, and then the typo self-corrects itself and makes it even worse. You know how that happens, and you say the thing you didn't mean to say because you've already pushed send. So this word typos or typos for being an example, it carries a lot of meaning even to us today. I think we can understand it really well. When I was growing up, before we had electronic devices, we still had devices you could do typos on, but you couldn't have spell check on them and you couldn't correct them very easily other than with Twink. Okay, so we'd have a typewriter. Anyone here use the typewriter? I remember going with a group of school kids to a museum a few years ago, and the kids had such a great time clicking on typewriters, going like, this is amazing. Click, 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 cha-ching. Like, they were so excited, and I was like, man, I'm old. But here's the thing with a typewriter. We know how one works, those of us who are old, but for those that are younger don't, okay, when you hit the button, it's actually a real button. Okay, and you clunk it down and it activates underneath this little trigger thing that bangs this bar up, and on the end of the bar there is a mark, and that mark might be like the letter A, say it's a capital A, so you hold down the button over here to hit the A to make the capital one come up, and as that capital mark comes up, it punches against the carbon ribbon that puts some of the carbon onto your piece of paper. How cool is that? And you can write whole letters. You can write books with one of those. Now, if you do a typo with one of those, what do you do? I mean, and as time went on, they had these other buttons, remember? They got semi-technical, where you could actually click on it and it would put white stuff off a white ribbon onto it, so you could retype the black or red onto it. Pretty cool. But if you did a typo, it was a major drama. But here's the thing. The typo wasn't the typewriter's fault. You'd pushed the wrong button, but you got exactly what was on the marker, didn't you? If you meant it to be a B and you got an A, it was because you'd hit A. And it was always, always accurate. Just like today, the typos that we make on our phone or on your iPad or computer, it's actually always accurate. You hit the key that says A and you get A. It's accurate to the mark. When Paul is saying, Timothy, be an example, he's actually saying, make your mark. Make your mark, and your mark will always be what it is. And it's speaking into this idea of authenticity. It's speaking into this idea that we're showing somebody else what should be. So he's saying, look, in your life, if you think it's important to be capital A, then let your life be capital A, and you hit that button so that the mark prints capital A, and that typo is accurate. And others will see it, and they will go, he's capital A. If you go, man, it's so important to be a person who's honest. Will you make sure that the mark of your life is honesty? And as you live this life, you punch that key so that honesty leaves its mark so that others look on and they go, he is honest. And then they would go, that's what I want too. I'll follow the example. And this means that nobody can look on Timothy and despise him and look down on him because he's young, because here's how it works. Timothy is following Paul. Paul is following Jesus. Jesus is the typo. It's like a big J, capital J over here. Paul's actually not doing a capital or lowercase p. Paul's going, wow, I'm capital J as well. And then Timothy's going, I'm capital J. And who's going to despise that? Because Timothy is seeking to live like Jesus, that his life would be a mark where we would see it and we would say, that mark is accurate to Jesus. Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, but set an example for the followers. Let the mark, let the blow of, and back in those days, it would have been more like a die or a stamp that you smacked into that piece of leather or into that piece of steel, and it would leave its mark. Let your mark be left and let it be true to who you are and who you're seeking to follow. So when he says, Timothy, you be an example of somebody who's following the example of Jesus. And what would that example be? It would be in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. You could unpack it. We're not going to unpack all of that, but I look at that word conduct. We'll just unpack that one. It's interesting that earlier he's saying, don't let anyone look down on you. Don't let anyone lower you down. Lowing down. But this word here about in conduct is actually talking about taking something that's down or within and bringing it up. He's saying, be an example in your conduct. Take what you know is true, what you believe and what you value, and let it come on up and be shown. It's authenticity. Be authentic. Live out what you believe. That's what he's calling of Timothy. So here's Timothy, young guy, in a church full of old people and young people. And maybe some people are going like, Timothy, he's like the leader around here. He's too young for that. And Paul's saying, don't let people do that to you. Don't let that stick. You turn that around and you be the one who's an example, a typo to others. But I think about Timothy and I think, well, once Timothy gets that news, it could be easy for Timothy, as he's told to not let older ones look down on him because he's young, it could be pretty easy for Timothy to start looking down on those who are older, couldn't it? To be going, you judgmental, critical old people. Like, I'm following Paul and he's following Jesus, so you better get following me. Like, you know, because that's logically how it would flow. And I love that Paul doesn't leave it there. Go to chapter 5 and verse 1. Because I think what Paul instructs Timothy next is the completion of the idea that family does matter, that young or old, we can be examples to each other and encouragers of each other. And here Paul gives clear direction of the valuing of all ages in this family we call church. There's true equality and there's true honouring. He says this, verse 1, do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters with absolute purity. It's interesting this instruction he gives to Paul. Let's start at the beginning. Verse 1, do not rebuke an older man harshly. So here's how it could be. Timothy's just got a letter from Paul, the great Paul, saying don't let anyone look down on you. And then next week he rocks up to, I don't know what's happening in the community, but the church family's there, and somebody's down on him because he's young, and he's got the instruction from Paul, and he's going, let me read to you what Paul says, you older man. Do not look down on me because I am young. You know, it's like, so it's so interesting that straight away he's going, hey, by the way, Timothy, as you are not to let that happen, be an example, be careful how you deal with that in practice. Do not rebuke an older man harshly. So he's younger, here's this older man who maybe he sees a fault in, and he's saying, don't rebuke him harshly. Those words, rebuke harshly, is it literally means don't hit him in a vulnerable place. Do with that what you like. But don't strike him. Do you see how harsh the word is? He's saying to the person who's older than you, who you see a fault in, Timothy, never be harsh with them. Don't punch them. Don't strike them. Don't take your words that you're trying to be an example and a typo in and use them in a bad way. Then he says this, but exhort him as if he were your father. There's an extremity here. It's like this. Don't punch the guy, but hug him. It's literally what the words are saying. It's saying, don't strike him, but come along really close. It's saying, as you make the call on this guy, do it shoulder to shoulder, side by side, arm around, get close. And the word actually means, like, in a sense, you do that in a comforting fashion. See how different that is? It's not accusing and confronting. It's comforting, and it's this idea of exhorting that you would come close to comfort, even though there might be a call you are making that means that, hey, you are wrong right now. So in the family, sometimes people are wrong. And sometimes we have to have those honest conversations. But how do we do that? I remember a day when my dad was wrong. And it was a really hard day. Something had happened in our family, and the way my dad was reacting to it was really wrong. And I was in my 30s, just a young guy. And I remember coming to my dad and him venting about what was going on, and his attitude was all out of line, and I felt like telling him off. I felt like going, Dad, you're wrong. Sort it out. You can't say that. You can't think that. And my dad didn't need me to tell him off that day. And I don't know why, some God wisdom thing, but you know what I did to my dad that day as I saw him? I saw him wrong, but I also saw why he was broken. And I remember, and we're not a huggy family, okay? And I remember going up to my dad, two arms, and I remember hugging him and not saying anything and pulling him tight. This is my old dad. And just holding him tight until the tension went. And in that moment, what's interesting is that he knew he was wrong. Don't strike somebody. Comfort them. And yes, sometimes there'll be words to be spoken. Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. And for some of us, I know that some of this picture here is, we're talking about family, and the picture that Paul uses is that of family, of father, mother, brothers, sisters. And sometimes our view of that is actually warped by our experience, and it's not a healthy picture. But that's not the standpoint that Paul's coming from. He's coming from a position of saying that mother, father, brother, sister should be a healthy thing. It's a picture that should be strong for us about belonging, about acceptance, about love, about faithfulness and friendship and loyalty. Then he says, treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. It's so interesting that the same word here about the younger men and the younger woman is the word used the chapter before with Timothy about him being younger. Isn't it interesting that if you are younger, you are not youngest normally? There's someone else in your world, or certainly in this church family, who's younger than you. If there's not, then you don't know what I'm saying right now because you're that little, okay? Everyone else in the room here, There are others who are younger than you. So what Paul just said to Timothy applies to everybody in this room as an old person. Does that make sense? That every one of us in this room has the potential to look at somebody else and lower them down in our thinking or our actions because they're younger than us. So Paul doesn't just say, Timothy, don't let those old guys be like that. You be an example. Oh, Timothy, by the way, don't you pull other young guys down. Don't you despise and think lowly of them because they are young. And he uses this word, see them as brother, see them as sister. Now, for some of you, that doesn't help. But in the picture here, it's a beautiful thing. It's that thing where if it's me, a man, here's my sister, and somebody would seek to do something wrong to my sister, then I would be the one that would jump in the gap to protect her. And if you read the Bible story through that, that was an honourable thing to protect the purity of your sister. And of your brother, I mean, there's that language in the Old Testament that talks about friendship and love, and it's saying, man, it's just maybe possible that there's a friend who could be closer than a brother. What that tells us about the idea of brother is that brother's really close. That might not be your experience. But when Paul's writing this, he's saying the closest relationship you can imagine, in his case, he's going, that's my brother. He's going, man, everyone around you who is younger than you, treat them as your brother. Have their back. Be there for them. Want the best for them. Protect them. Stand up for them. Encourage them. And there's a piece about mother, and it's interesting that the father-mother thing and then even the brother-sister thing, it's quite possible that those first words, don't punch the old guy, hug him, are applicable to all the relationships. That in a way, that first sentence is the umbrella to the rest of the sentences. In fact, it doesn't even say a lot there about women and men. Literally, this is how it reads. Just lost it there, just a sec. This is how it reads. Treat elder as fathers. Treat younger as brothers. Treat elder as mothers. Treat younger as sisters. It doesn't even talk about men and women, but it is talking about the brother-sister. Do you see what that means? There's this equality that sits over it about within our relationships that whether it's this person or this person, if they're younger, you treat them as a brother and a sister. If they're older, you treat them as a mother, as a father. Because we're family. Don't hit them. Hug them. Don't confront them, but comfort them. Treat everyone as family. Look at verse 3. He then goes on to give a little bit of practical description, and you can read the rest of the chapter, and it has a few of these. I'll just take this first one to give you an example. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. So sometimes there's a relationship in the family that needs extra care, okay? That's what it's talking about. Verse 4, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. See how practical it is? It's going, man, treat everybody like brother and sister, father and mother. And there's some special needs out there, but be wise how you interact with that. Because you don't want to be robbing someone else of the opportunity to do the right thing that pleases God by you being the one who always jumps in and fixes it for them. That's really what it's saying. But the attitude that there is beautiful. The attitude there is going, we're family, therefore family matters, and we are the ones who treat others well, value them, honour them, love them. I think of it like this. It's like I've got a friend called Mark, and Mark lives out in Arawahia, and next door to him, he had a neighbour called Frank. And Frank is very old, like in his 90s, and Frank used to live in a shed. His house burnt down, and so he moved to live in the shed. Insurance built him a new house, and he decided to stay living in the shed and rent the house out. That's because Frank's old school. And then he's actually moved off the property because they've sold the property. And we've since found out that where he's moved to, he's also living in someone else's shed that he's rented. So he must like sheds. For the many years that he lived next door to my mate Mark, Mark always had an eye out for Frank. Always. Sometimes Frank could appear a bit grumpy, but he was a good guy, but he was old. And Mark was always looking out for him and popping in to see him, and they'd take meals to him, and if anything was wrong, they'd offer to fix it. And this is what Mark said to me one day. He says, you know what? I treat Frank like my dad. Because I like to think that my dad, and at this time his dad was a Marston, and he's since come up here into full-time care, but he was a Marston. He says, I like to think that somebody else in Marston is treating my dad like that. Do you see that? That's the attitude it's talking about here. That we would see each other as brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and we would be to them family. I love that. In my life, as a young person, I'm talking about when I was young, there were some old people in my life that had great influence in my life. And I've picked a few to tell you about. These are not the most significant people in my life. These are just unique older people. And maybe you can think about some older people currently in your life or have been. I was in the church in a stage when we were young guys and we were the rebels being looked down on because we were young, because we were bringing the raucous music along, wanting to introduce instruments and stuff to the church. There was a time like that. And there was this one old guy in the church who had this love of the old hymns. And one day, my perspective of him and music changed because I thought that he hated music. I really did, because he hated the music we wanted to have. And one day I went to his house, and after lunch, which was really good as a young guy, eating a big feed, that wins you over a little bit, he pulled out a saw and a violin bow and he proceeded to play old hymns on the handsaw. Anyone ever seen that, where they wah, wah, wah the handsaw and they play it with a bow? And I've discovered he loved music. And he loved songs that worshiped God. And it was so helpful for me to value somebody older in my world around a point of tension. That was a special moment. I remember this other guy that I was in a life group. I don't know what we called them back then, but these life groups. And the one I was a part of when I was like 16, 17, had a diversity of ages in it. It was very unique. And there was this old guy there who had little, short, fat fingers. And when he preached at church, they were like all glued together. I remember his hand. Some of you know him. His name was John Warburton. And he had these little, fat fingers. But here's what I remember about John Warburton is he was an incredible man of faith who believed that God could do amazing things because he'd spent a lot of his life in India. And he was always telling stories about India and tigers and stuff like that and about some of the miraculous things he'd seen God do in India. I love that. That built into my life faith. But one of the guys that had the least time with, but had a great influence of an idea of a truth, was a man called Mr. Dyett. He was Scottish. I remember visiting his house only a few times with my dad when I was quite young, 14, 15. And one day Mr. Dyett said to us, he said, oh, I can't wait to be with Jesus, because then I'll be free from sin. And I remember asking him a few questions about that because I didn't get it. Like, because he was really old. He was so old, he was probably incapable of sin. And I remember asking Mr. Dyett going, what do you mean? Like, you don't sin now. Like, not like I do. Like, and I remember Mr. Dyett explaining to me that, you know what? Though I love God and I love his word, it doesn't matter how old I get, I still battle with sin. That marked me, you know, that was like, that was a reality check, because I had this idea that everybody older was perfect, and that who am I, young guy, struggling? And what he did that day, is this what Mr. Dyett did that day? Don't look anyone look down on you because you're young. You know what he did? He lifted me up, but by lowering himself, and he actually went across a cup of tea with me and my dad. He went, we are equals in the family. I struggle with you. That was a beautiful moment in my life. And it wasn't until quite a few years later that a penny started to drop the significance of that, that life is a struggle, but God's grace is enough. But that started with Mr. Dyett. I remember this other lady called Mrs. Fitness. She was the oldest lady in the church. She was called Mrs. Fitness. And she was a goer, like she could get around and do stuff. And she would invite young people to her home almost like weekly for meals. We would go to her home and she'd put on these big feeds for us. I remember the day that we delivered firewood to Mrs. Fitness when I was about 16. And we delivered firewood and she just said, drop it at the front there. And she lived in an old state house over in Myroa there, which had no sort of driveway. They had those little lanes that you could sort of wheel a wheelbarrow down the side path and through the gate to the back shed. And she's just like, just Mrs. Fitness, she's 90-something, just drop the firewood at the front. And us young boys are like, no, we're going to take it round the back and we're going to put it in the shed for you. And we did that for Mrs. Fitness. And then we sat and she fed us up. You know what? Those moments changed how I saw old people in the church when I was a young person, because we had those moments of interaction and connection and just got to know each other. Some of you know Erica McCurdy, that's Taylor's grandma. She's this old lady from Whitiora Bible Church who still prays for me and my family and has been doing so for about 30 years. And she's the only old lady around that I get to kiss on the lips when I see Mrs. McCurdy. She's cool. Been praying for us for 30 years? I mean, I am one of the older ones here now. When the church first started, somebody said, there's no old people here. And I went, we're going to have to grow our own. So we're working on it. We're getting older. And so for some of you who are younger here, you see me as older. I want to say, when I was younger, I learned to value the elderly. And I want to keep doing that. And I encourage you to do that. Treat them better than you do your mums and dads. But there's some young people in my life too. Sarah Natsky is a courageous young lady who has encouraged me with her gift of encouragement and just watching her life through the last, how old are you now? 20, whatever years. Man, just so encouraging. And so many of you fit in that category. It's like Lucas here, he's been in the church, what, almost 2 years now? And in the family of God, and he's just a young guy. And yet I'm inspired by your faithfulness to be present with the family of God and to contribute and to show love to others. It's amazing. And I don't know if she's here today. There's this young girl. Is Katie here today? She's not. I'll tell her myself during the week. Katie is this girl. I love the whole thing of compassion for the needy, and yet she's somebody who sees need and thinks, what can I do to help with that need? And like the other week, she saw this way she could generate, both be an advocate for and raise money for people who are poor, and she goes and lives on a few dollars a day for a week. And shares that story with others. I'm inspired by that. Because family matters around here, whether you're young or old. Treat everybody older as your mum and dad. Treat everybody younger as your brother and sister. Don't punch them in the face, but hug them close. Don't confront, but comfort. And be an example to each other. So here's some questions that I've been thinking about this week when it comes to the generational diversity we have in this family. Maybe you want to think about these questions. How often do my words, actions, and especially my thoughts strike out and hit a person who's different from me or I consider disagrees with me? Maybe my words and actions don't, but sometimes my thoughts do. How often do I find myself being critical of others just because they think differently than I do? I need to hold that in check. How often do I come alongside that person and make the call in a comforting instead of confronting way? Have I looked down on someone who is young lately? Have you? How have I looked down on somebody who's younger than me on their ideas or their opinions or their way they see the world? So there are some things that I've been thinking about this week. But I've got three other questions that I just want to put up here on screen that I want you to consider right now for the next few minutes. Paul has used the picture with Timothy of that of a family. So what I want you to do in a few moments is get into groups of maybe three or four and just work through these questions, especially the third question. But the first two I think are important. How does this picture help or not help you, the picture of family? Because there might be a reality for you. You might go, man, if I was to treat all the old guys around here like my dad, they wouldn't be very good. Well, just be honest about that. But then I think address the second question. What do you think the intent is of Paul saying that? We've talked a bit about that. But especially question three. What can you do to become closer to and to value those who are in a different generation than your own here at CBC? If we don't think about this question, then this is just a nice idea. And then we wait around and maybe we have a Mother's Day or Father's Day, or we have next week's Grandparents' Day, or we have some special guest who's coming for dinner. And every now and then we do this little thing, you know, that pops up and says, family matters, we do guess who's coming for lunch, you know. But unless we start to think about this third question and actually go, you know what, there are things that I can do to bridge the gap, to reach out across the generational diversity of our church, to value and honour those who are younger than me, to value and honour those who are older than me. So I was thinking of a whole lot of ways we could do that, and I was starting to write my list, and I thought, that's ridiculous, because you guys know this, but you've got to work this out just as I do. And so that's what we're going to do. Right now, I'm going to pray, and then we're going to get into groups, maybe three, four, or five, have a look at these questions, bounce into the first two if they make any relevance, but if not, jump to question three, and you've got about 10 minutes to chew over that, and I guess think of it in theory, but it may be as you do that, that there's also a little bit of you that's going, you know what, that's a good idea. This week I'm going to commit to that action, to that attitude. And maybe it is in that moment when you're together with a group of others, you might even voice it and say, you know what, that idea that you just shared, I'm going to do that this week. Because family matters around here. This is my way of loving one another in the church. Let's just pray and then we'll just break into groups, okay? Father God, I thank you that we call you Father because we are in your family. And we know that family's been distorted so much in many of our lives, and yet we know that for you it's a beautiful thing because it's about being included and belonging and safe. So thank you, Father, that we come to you today knowing your love and your acceptance of us. Thank you that you're the kind of Father who lifts us up. And we pray, Father, that in this family, as mums, dads, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, that together we would be discovering what it means to value and love each other across the generational divide. Even in these next moments as we consider this, would you by your Spirit lead our thinking? And maybe with something that's shared, just grip our soul, knowing this is an action that the Spirit of God is prompting in my life. Just lead us in these next moments as we would consider what to do from here. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.